although that, you know, there are good reports from bits of the coast, and more bass has been seen around, definitely. It's a balance between, you know, lifting your foot off the brake gently, not tipping us back into a situation where things are going the wrong way, but also providing that flexibility to allow us to keep the bass that's already dead.
Basically, inshore fishermen that can't travel nomadically in smaller boats. You know, a true inshore fisherman needs more options to fish what they see each day, but these options are being continually thinned out year on year.
You know, once we lose our fishermen here on the East Coast, then, you know, their culture, their heritage, you know, the communities really do start to suffer. And so that's why bass is incredibly important, and I think we need to up-to-date, effective management system with up-to-date data to look at this problem.
Welcome to the third instalment of the Fathom and NFFO collaboration. It's been an interesting series with the NFFO so far, picking off high-level issues such as the Joint Fisheries Statement, the Fisheries Industry Science Partnership pillar of the UK Seafood Fund, and now, in this episode, we take a different approach and focus in on one species. So we're going to dive deep into the world of sea bass. We welcome on Barry Dees, Chief Exec of the NFFO, and as a guest host, we invited Newlyn-based fisherman Andrew Pascoe to help us explore the past, present and future of sea bass. Bass is one of the front-runner species set for a fisheries management plan, which makes this a timely episode, even more so with DEFRA recently putting out a call to industry to sign up and engage in a new management plan consultation. Have a look in the show notes if you want to sign up to this. And to ensure we capture voices from all around the coast, we invited you, the listener, to feed in your thoughts, concerns, ideas on the current and future plans for bass. I wanted to say thanks to everyone that engaged with us across social media on this. It helps ensure we are covering all angles as well as any regional differences. And this is something we plan to continue for future episodes. So keep a lookout on Twitter, Facebook or Instagram as we build up to future episodes. Anyway, that's enough from me now. I'm going to hand over to Barry and Andrew. Let's get into it.
As well as myself and Barry here, we're joined by Bass Wizard. Andrew Pascoe from Newlyn. So thanks, Andrew. Thanks for coming along. Good to have you in the room. I'm sure you have plenty to say on this subject anyway. And this is like no small matter. I'm sure we could probably sit here for hours talking about this sort of stuff. And it's going to affect people right around our coastline, what we're talking about today. So hopefully of good interest to everybody. And we'll probably pick off all sorts of issues that come on the back of this. And I'm sure it will stir up more conversation down the line. But I thought we might just kick off with a bit of a brief history, almost set the scene. Why are we here? Why are we talking about sea bass as opposed to other species? What's happened in the last few years or decade, could I say? Certain restrictions we got, seasonal closures, but a bit of flexibility appearing on the horizon, some bit of light shining through potentially. Maybe start with you, Barry. What's the key moments that sort of led us to this point?
I think you're right that, you know, we are focusing on one species this time, but it's a species that's really important to a whole range of fisheries and, you know, a whole range of different gears, different ports, different sizes of vessel. And of course, it's economically very important, both for all of those fisheries. And the background, I suppose, is that there's increasing fishing pressure on bass building kind of incrementally over the years. And we had the very large French petrel fishery and an emerging drift net fishery targeting bass. And that's okay as long as recruitment stays high. But when you get a succession of years in which recruitment, the year classes are below average, the biomass starts to fall, and that triggered emergency measures that were brought in. We were in the Common Fisheries Policy at the time. and increased minimum landing size. I think we already had nursery areas protected. And then a prohibition on the targeted fisheries. So the pear trawler fishery and the drift net fisheries were banned outright. And then there were bycatch fisheries only for a range of other fisheries, gill nets and trawlers. And of course, we've got the rod and line fishery as well. Not forgetting, of course, there's quite a considerable proportion of the catch is taken by recreational fishermen. So that was a hard pill to swallow. Since then, most recently, we've been making the case, it's probably too early to take the brakes off completely. But there ought to be room to provide increased flexibility in these fisheries. We're particularly anxious about those bass that go back dead, regulatory discards. And we felt for some time that there is scope to adjust the tonnage limits to allow more of those fish to be retained without blunting the conservation purpose behind them. So there's a whole range of measures that are in place now. The big picture, looking at the science, is that fishing pressure has been dramatically reduced, which is what you would expect. You take out the directed fisheries and you impose these restrictions. So round about the target fishing mortality. But, recovery takes a bit of time. It's dependent on the incoming year classes each year. And although there are good reports from bits of the coast and more bass has been seen around, definitely, it's a balance between, lifting your foot off the brake gently, not tipping us back into a situation where things are going the wrong way, but also providing that flexibility to allow us to keep the bass that's already dead as an unavoidable bycatch. So I think that's a summary of where we've got to at this stage.
Sounds good, Andrew.
Well, no, just to thank Barry really, because he's covered every aspect of it and then not left me anything at all.
I was going to say, it's job done. See you later.
No, but I would just like to just add a little bit to that. I mean, Barry's right. There was a lot of pressure on bass going back, especially with the midwatering during the spawning seasons, and that's had a major effect, obviously. It's funny, really, because commercial fishermen are a strange breed. And hopefully this will be a good example of how to learn from how to manage a fishery. Increasing the minimum landing size was something that a lot of commercial fishermen was against. But I think now, if you ask them, they probably think it's probably a good idea because they can slowly now see the benefits, as Barry's saying, that all the regulations have been brought in. Has helped to increase the stock now to, the science has shown improvement, catches are showing, the spread of bass is getting wider as well with water temperatures and climate change, which I think is where we need to concentrate a lot more on sort of enabling people that maybe even haven't got an entitlement at the moment to get one, to show the evidence of the fish spreading. Because historically they haven't got any, but now they're seeing them in their waters. So there's lots to going forward to think about as far as that's concerned. And I think that's mainly where, if any new quota does come along, extra quota does come along, I think that's where it should be targeted, is to, one, the bycatch, so that not just the boats that have got a bycatch entitlement now, but every boat gets a very minimal bycatch so that we can land them instead of throwing them away dead. Of course, fishermen again are characters that will exploit any loopholes, so it's got to be quite tight so they can't target them. But to so we can get a full picture of where the bass is spreading to and where they're being caught to, and at the same time, sort of stopping that fish being thrown away dead. So I think it's vitally important that any new you know extra quota should be used in that direction first, rather than the vessels that have already got you know a decent amount of fish to make a living with.
Cool, good stuff. I think that sets the scene well, gives us a broad understanding of where we've been and as Andrew just alluded to there, where we could go with this a little bit with some flexibility in the future. But I'll just touch on this as well before we get into a couple of questions that we've had in from people out there around the coastline, bringing it forward to sort of 2022, obviously from the end of year negotiations. I'm sure people will be aware there were some minor changes there to Bass, some slight minor increases there for hook and line, and a bit of flexibility for some of the bycatch for netting and trawling. But where are we with this? Has this come into play? Can we take advantage of this change yet, Barry? Or are we sort of in the waiting room still? I know there's a bit of complexity and some regulatory issues that might be affecting us here to get stuck into this.
Yeah, well, we made the case in the December negotiations, as we have done in the previous 2 years, I think, that we need to provide flexibility to retain dead bass caught as an unavoidable bycatch. And in principle, I think that the UK agreed, but I don't think they were persuaded enough to make it a priority in the negotiations. So we were surprised when the initiative was really taken by the EU side. Some of those member states pushed for exactly those kind of relaxations. Nothing dramatic, you know, just a bit of extra tonnage in the bycatch fisheries, but very welcome for that. Come this year, we were surprised that when we were told that the increased tonnages couldn't be implemented until May, because the UK didn't have the legal powers to make that adjustment. This is something that really needs to be looked at. You can't have international negotiations for the year end and then only implement them halfway through the year. And we've made that point to ministers. The UK has put a lot of focus on the Bass Management Plan, which is one of the front runners, and it seems to be challenging a lot of its focus in that direction. So I think that means that everybody that's involved in the bass fishery needs to be involved in that conversation about the shape of the bass management plan. So it's a mixed picture, really. One of slow progress in increasing the flexibilities, still a lot of frustrations. And, you know, the point that Andrew makes about those vessels that don't have an entitlement but still have an unavoidable bycatch of bass, that must be incredibly frustrating. And, you know, I think that's something that really needs to be addressed within this the emerging fisheries management plan for bass.
Yeah. Completely. Actually, that leads us in really well, actually, to a couple of questions that we've had in. So as part of this episode, we reached out through social media just to encourage people to raise any thoughts, questions, concerns about Bass. And we've had some really good responses, actually. So it's really good to actually get those voices heard from around the quayside, around the coastline. An entitlement has come up. So from what Andrew was saying and what you just touched on there, Barry, I'll just read out a couple of comments, really, I think will open up a bit of discussion here. So the first one being, Bass entitlement transfer rules appear to discriminate against over 8 meter vessels again versus under 8 meter vessels, which are now arguably open to increased effort through greater flexibility. Some more sensible and workable and transparent rules in this area would be good. So that was just one comment. So this whole issue around over 8 versus under 8 and transferring entitlement across them. And just to pick up on another point, just to pull these two themes together, Another question came in saying some allowance must be made for bass expanding their range north, possibly due to climate change. In southwest Scotland, one boat has bass entitlement. Nobody else has a provable track record of catching them. Now the Solway Firth is full of them and nobody is allowed to catch them. So I think what you've already both touched on kind of starts to lean into that. But yeah, any other thoughts on this? It's probably not a question that's easy to answer in one quick hit, but maybe we can just discuss it a bit, thrash it out a bit. What do you both think?
Yeah, especially, I mean, we are seeing all sorts of species going further north, and the guy that touches on the southwest of Scotland and seeing more bass in the waters. This is a prime example, really, of where entitlements need to be on every boat so that we can see this movement of fish. The MMO can see, you know, the data back with the catch-ups and that, because at the moment just being thrown away dead, which is no good to anybody. And this, you know, this is one of the prime examples of how this needs to be across all vessels, really. What some way of, whether it be a minimal sort of 2% bycatch or on board so they can actually land a few bass they're catching, or whether it be a certain small amount of weight per boat per day as a bycatch. But so we can get this picture of the way bass is sort of just reading itself farther north, you know, year on year. And these boats wouldn't have had an entitlement because they didn't catch them, you know, during the reference period, which is a few years ago now. So that's one prime example. And the first question about transfer of entitlement, I can see where he's coming from there. There's quite a few boats now that are sort of transferring their entitlement to slightly bigger, slightly more powerful vessels in the under 10 meter sector, which is going to put a little bit more pressure on the stock. Obviously, they're still limited to whether it be the netting bycatch or the hook and line quota total, but obviously a bigger and faster boat would give them a bit more chance to catch that extra weight. So yeah, a little bit more transparency there would be good. I think it would be just so everybody knows where they stand and whether it's possible to do that. And also new entrants as well. I think it's very difficult now to try and keep youth in the industry or bring them into the industry. And in some areas, you know, bass is a way in, quite a sort of low cost setup if you're hooking line for them. They haven't got access to entitlements, and the value that's going on these entitlements now, you know, something that is sort of an effect of giving entitlements out is also put a value on them. So it'd be good to see again any new quota coming along, maybe put onto new entitlements for new entrants and that sort of thing. So when if they get into the industry, they can have an entitlement given to them for a period of time until, you know, whatever time that might be, if they would give up or whatever it might be that goes back to the government. But just a way of getting more people in the industry and more entitlements out there to increase, rather than give the current entitlements more quota if the stocks are looking better. I think it's far better to sort of spread that out a little bit.
Yeah, good stuff, Andrew. Good to go into the detail of that, actually, and really interesting points, I reckon, about this whole new entrant, young fisherman, I guess, going back not that long ago for you. Yeah. it would have been something interesting and really important to you coming into the fishery, and no doubt for plenty of other people around the coast. So
yeah, I think it's worth saying that for young entrants, the small inshore boats, for the way they got into the industry, and back when I was starting, you could just jump in the punt and go to sea and catch a few mackerel on the hand line, or, you know, bass or pollock or whatever it might be, put a few pots in the water and catch a few lobsters and crabs, and you learn your trade you know, on weekends and after school, and obviously going to see if your family involved as well. But it was so much easier then to come into the industry as a youngster without any of the pressures of licenses, entitlements and that sort of thing. So I think it would be nice to have some sort of way in for these in the future, because it's, you know, whether that they agree or not, that DEFRA have put on this value on licenses because they've given them out, and now it's far harder to get into it. But times have changed, and it's a lot difficult now for, you know, for younger entrants. Mm. But something I'd like to see, and it could be something that goes, you know, it doesn't stay with the person. If they come out, they go back to the to the MMO, and the MMO then issue it again, and there's a waiting list and that sort of thing. But something's got to be done with a new quota rather than dishing out to the ones who already got it.
Yeah, good, valid points. Yeah, and interesting to explore that. Is this more sort of holistic management of something as opposed to appreciate the importance of science, but then there's all these other issues that probably may go unnoticed, or the impact of these things further down the line in fishing communities and helping youngsters or new entrants get through and up the ranks a little bit. So we've got a couple of other questions, but obviously, Barry, if you want to pick up on anything there, go for it.
I think Andrew's covered it, but what I would say is that if you draw an artificial line through the industry at 8 meters or 10 meters or 15 meters, you create some happy people, some unhappy people. You also create different incentives. And I think we need to be very much more careful. I think we've learned a lot from drawing a line at under 10. We need to be a lot more careful about how we do these things, do management. And as I say, there ought to be an opportunity to do things better under the Bass Management Plan. I would certainly echo Andrew's points about the need to encourage young fishermen to join the industry and to provide a kind of stepladder in there. At the same time, you can't just have a open access fishery. We know that opening the door to everybody is the way to make it miserable for everybody in the long term. So it's a balancing act in all of these things. But you know, within that, there ought to be that room for flexibility that we've talked about so often.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, my fear is really, I think we've already seen it in the bigger vessels and the over tens, and especially when quotas involved, and big companies taking over. It's very few private boats now, and very, very few opportunities for younger generation to get into that bigger boat world. And it seems as if the same is now coming down slightly into the smaller boats. It's very similar, where entitlements and fishing opportunities are sort of taken up and very difficult to get hold of and very costly now, which is something we never had growing up. It was so much easier to just get involved with fishing and then move on. And historically, the skipper of a 20 meter trawler has generally come from a small inshore boat first. It was something he used to do, muck around with, and got the love of the sea through that before he didn't sort of leave school and jump straight on the skipper or trawler. It was so taking these opportunities away from these younger generation is one of the, I think, one of the reasons why we're not seeing as many coming through the system. Obviously, it's down to lots of different things, but just to make it a little bit more accessible to them would be good.
Okay, good. Thanks. And we have touched on this actually, or kind of slightly hinted about this next question, but I'll read it out just briefly, just so we cover everything that's come in. But a final point before we go on to a couple of voice notes is, could you tell me why a ring net is not on the list of eligible gear types, which means there is no allowance for any unavoidable bycatch? So some gear types can land an amount of bycatch, but not all gear types. I think, Andrew, maybe you sort of picked up on this a bit in the sense of having that flexibility, that ability to land a very small percentage of bycatch to at least show some data in terms of what is being caught around the coast might be a useful thing. But any thoughts on this one?
Well, get a crystal ball. I think the reason they probably chose that gear type as not having a bycatch is because generally any bycatch of bass is alive and survivable. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why they chose to leave that gear type out of the bycatch allowance. But I don't really understand why they did that. I could have had the same thing as the trawls, but again, I suppose that they're catching an awful amount of tonnage as well, maybe 20 tons. So a 5% bycatch would be quite great as well.
Sounds good. Do you want to play the voice note? Our first voice note question comes from Carl Davies, who is a skipper operating from Conwy's in Wales.
Hi, I'm Carl Davis. I'm a fisherman working out of Conwy in North Wales at the moment on an 11-metre catamaran. I fished line bass from 1999 to about 2011 on a under 10-metre boat. Plus we did angling trips as well with it. Up to about 2008, 2009, catches were good, but then they declined. So I bought a new vessel, over 10 metres. That was about 2011. And we ended up having to apply each quarter, I think it was, for a permit to fish on the over 10 metre. There were so few about at that time that it just wasn't worth all the paperwork to apply for that permit. So I stopped fishing really when the stocks went down, and I think in 2016 it was, of course, the track record. We weren't fishing, so we didn't have any track record. Those that left the fishery alone at this time when it was at a pretty low ebb, I don't know, I feel that we're in effect punished for for maybe doing the right thing. I don't know. We were fishing full time with shellfish and other finfish, so we just didn't have any track record or any other way to prove that we could have an entitlement, so we lost the entitlement to fish. So the stocks now are increasing, I think, all over the country really, in a lot of places that there haven't been bass before, further north. And it's important for, you know, smaller inshore vessels to be able to fish for whatever's in season, or stocks that are in good abundance. And it seems year on year it becomes increasingly difficult to do that because you're being narrowed down, with all your options are being narrowed down. Bass moving north, giving fishers options for where cod have disappeared, but there's just no track record for entitlements. So, one suggestion might be just to give like a mini entitlement. I mean, the shellfish entitlements and the finfish, you know, the caps, you can still land something shellfish wise and finfish wise, even if your license is capped or you've got a shellfish entitlement. So I don't know, maybe an option of something similar with bass, maybe, you know, I'm only throwing this out there, figure, you know, 200 or 300 kilos per license, you know, so you had options to land a couple of boxes when the fishing's good. Just helps a license without an entitlement to be more polyvalent and take some pressure off species most frequently fished for. Basically inshore fishermen that can't travel nomadically in smaller boats, you know, a true inshore fisherman needs more options to fish what they see each day, but these options are being continually thinned out year on year.
Right on. Yeah, well, that could have been, I think, any intro fisherman anywhere in the country. The frustrations are pretty much the same. Whether it be him with his bass, he went to shellfish, but he also got the same with those that went to bass or other species and didn't fish shellfish for a while and lost their entitlements through for shellfish as well, which is very frustrating as intro fisherman, as he says. Diversification. The initial is you catch what's on your doorstep or what's prevalent at the time, and you can't sort of travel around to deeper waters or you know, farther away as a bigger fleet can. So that's that is exactly I would think that could be any sort of inshore fisherman anywhere in the country for so many different reasons. But flexibility again is, I think, the word needed here to just give everybody a little bit of a chance, as he says, to rather than throw. We touched on it earlier on, rather than throw bass away, to have some sort of small bycatch so you can land it.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there can be some examples of very rough justice when entitlements are extinguished under those what were regarded as emergency measures in 2016. I mean, I can't see that the big directed fisheries on bass will be permitted in the future. And so therefore, I think there must be some scope as the stocks rebuild for that kind of mini entitlement that Carl was talking about. And I've heard this from, you know, various people who are engaged in other fisheries, catch a small amount, variable amount, but you know, nothing that is going to impact on the stocks to any degree, but allows them to keep what they're catching. A couple of boxes, and as Carl rightly says, you know, there are in the shellfish and some finfish fisheries, there are, you know, that provision is there already. So there's a precedent there, and I think that's something that we should follow up. And you know, the point he makes and Andrew makes there about vessels with limited range, they need to be able to access the stocks that come into their area at the right seasons. You know, that's how you sustain an inshore fleet with vessels with limited range. So, you know, there's an awful lot in what Carl and Andrew are saying there. To follow up on. And I think, you know, when the consultations take place on fisheries management plan for bass, I think that those are the kind of things that we need to put forward as a coherent argument.
That's what I was going to say. It sounds good, Barry. And yeah, are these valid points to start coming up with and start developing into a bit more detail? Obviously, we're going to wait and see when the door opens to start influencing the fisheries management plan, but it's nothing stopping us now. I think having this conversation is really good. It just starts stimulating those ideas, see what the common themes are, start to prioritize things a little bit as we go around the coast. But just to the catching sector out there listening, or everyone listening, you know, the validity of these ideas or suggestions coming up, are these things that we should be starting to take a bit more serious and start building up?
Absolutely.
I was just going to say that the positives that come out of this sort of highly regulated fishery on the bass over the last few years, with the closed season and the available catches and entitlements, has been a sort of an example of how other fisheries should be maybe managed in the future as well, because basically, inshore fishing used to have seasons, and we used to be, you know, naturally affected by weather and storms and winter and things and pots come in and seasons, shellfish seasons change and everything changes. But that seems to have gone out the window a little bit recently. I think the shellfish sector, for example, could learn from the bass sort of regulation and the positive effect it's had by having a closed season and things like that. So there's lots of positives that come out of this. Not just we're seeing it working. This is the main thing. We're seeing the plan work. We're seeing the bass stocks increase, and hopefully this can be passed on to other fisheries.
Yeah, definitely some learning both ways, I think, isn't it? Yeah. And our second question comes in from Mike Warner, who is a fishmonger and wholesaler fish merchant based in Woodbridge, Suffolk.
Yeah, morning. It's Mike here, Passion for Seafood. Just wanted to just give you a bit of a voice note about what I was saying yesterday about the bass fishery here on the East Coast, on the Suffolk coast primarily. It's a really important fishery for us bass here, because we're what we call opportunity starved. So the number of commercial species we can land at any one time of the year, you can probably count on one hand, skate, Dover soles, bass, crab and lobster. There are other species, you know, that we can catch, but they're very much in the sort of insignificant category in terms of revenue. So bass are really, really important, and we fish for them with long lines, rod and line after May when the water clears, And also fixed gill nets. We catch a few trawling as well, but you know, that's a bycatch. But we need to be able to catch these things when they're here. And the fishermen our under 10 meter fleet should be allowed, I believe, to catch them by whatever means available, especially, you know, if they've got the entitlement to do so. The fishery is very artisanal, as I said, so the offtake of bass for the limited number of boats that have got an entitlement is minuscule, really, compared to what's happening with bigger vessels and foreign vessels on the south coast. And because of the seasonality of it, and because we're only able to catch it at certain times of the year, we need to be able to employ different methods to catch the bass at different stages. And that means long lines when the fish are feeding on the bottom. Obviously, later in the summer when the water clears and the bass are feeding in mid-water and offshore on pelagic fish, well, we can use lures. But we also need that netting facility as well, and especially now with fuel prices the way they are, which means, you know, trawling, bottom trawling is becoming increasingly less viable due to the high cost of fuel. So there are several things there which need to be addressed on the East Coast in terms of the bass fishery, and communities are suffering. There are no new entrants coming into the industry. There's not a lot of hope for youngsters if they did want to come in. And I think, you know, that once we lose our fishermen here on the East Coast, then, you know, their culture, their heritage, you know, the communities really do start to suffer. And so that's why bass is incredibly important. And I think we need to up-to-date, effective management system with up-to-date data to look at this problem.
Plenty of questions in that probably one question, but I think we've covered quite a bit of that already anyway. But yeah, Barry, I don't know if you want to sort of pick out anything out there that stands out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point that's been made really emphasizes the need to look at fisheries management, but in particular the future of the bass fishery, to see it in the round in terms of the health of the stock. That's got to go in the right direction, but you know, the balance between limiting access and new entrants, seasonality and limited range, and the need to look at the individual fishing businesses and the communities within that context. You know, what is necessary to sustain those, but both the businesses and the communities. And the final point that is made there about data, boring word, but you know, if you don't have good information, you can't manage a fishery. That's the bottom line. And you know, having good information feeding into the science ought to provide better stock predictions, therefore increased fishing opportunities, but also a way of the industry contributing to management itself. And you know, I know we keep harping back to the bass management plan, and of course it's an unknown quantity. We're right at the start of a journey here. But the one thing that's absolutely certain is, two things are certain, that if we leave it to the fisheries managers, they won't get it right. We need, as an industry, to be contributing at a port level, at a regional level, at a national level, to the design of the fisheries management plan. And the conversations need to take place with the people that are involved in the fishery. And the second point is the data, the information. We've got to have good catch information in order to manage the fishery effectively for the benefit of the people that are in that fishery. So I think there's a lot in the two questions that we've the two comments that we've received from the coast. I think there's an awful lot in there to think about and contemplate.
Anything else to add, Andrew? Or I feel like we're probably getting close to a bit of a conclusion now.
We've covered most of what Mike has already brought up.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly a good one to start with. I think from a front runner species, bass as a fisheries management plan is certainly going to highlight so many different issues and how we can get our heads around that and put something together that's sensible is going to be really interesting and a good process to go through, I think, for the knock-on to other species and other plans in the future. But I mean, that's more or less it. We're at about 40-odd minutes, so I don't want to carry on too long. But the idea, obviously, as you both know, we're going to summarise this as best possible and then put it to DEFRA to respond to. So is there anything else that we feel we need to add there? What are any other asks of DEFRA just before we wrap this up?
I suppose it's worth acknowledging that, you know, bass is a non-quota species, although it's under bycatch restrictions. And of course, the trade and cooperation agreement sets limits on tonnage limits on what we can fish in EU waters and what EU vessels can fish in our waters. The signs are that both sides want to take bass out of those general tonnages and manage them as a species. But it also raises a lot of questions. How much of this is going to be done jointly with the EU because it's a shared stock? How much is it going to be done with a domestic fisheries management plan that the UK works on its own? You know, what is the big picture in terms of non-quota species? So, you know, there's a lot of those big overarching political questions that are still hovering, waiting for a resolution. So I think it's important not to lose sight of that big picture as well.
Really? Yeah. All good, Andrew?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Any final points?
No, I already sort of touched on one thing there. We can,
yeah.
I'll probably think of something later on.
You can save it for DEFRA.
I know I will.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's always the way. I had one of those days yesterday. I won't get into it though. But anyway, thanks both. I think that was really good. I really enjoyed the way we've done that, actually, between the three of us, and then getting a few voices from East Coast and Wales and questions from other bits and places. So I think hopefully that will encourage people to tune into this and listen and then sort of follow this theme along as it turns into the fisheries management plan piece of work that we're going to do in the near future.
This episode was brought to you by the Cornish Fish Producers Organisation with support from the National Federation of Fishermen's Organisations. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.